Hello, hello, hello. Welcome to this live recording of Podcast Party here in Johannesburg. Thank you all for making it tonight. Thank you to my panelists. I hope we're going to have a fight and then we'll have some solutions afterwards. Our theme, as Sia has stated today, is informal trade, survival or strategy. For many of us here, informal traders are not just roadside sellers. We see them when we're driving here, driving to work, coming back from work. The informal economy is everywhere. But sometimes we forget that these are people who feed communities, who create jobs, who keep township economies alive. They're also under pressure, like many of us, and those pressures hit their incomes directly. So today, to talk about all this, I'm joined by Mr. Lubabalo Magwentu from the African Transformation Movement. He's also chairperson of the Section 79 Committee responsible for governance in the city of Johannesburg. My second guest is Mr. Botsang Modimoame. Such a beautiful name. Botsang Modimoame Muilwa. And he's the candidate for MMC Economic Development in the city of Johannesburg with Action SA. So he's got plans. He hasn't done things yet, but we look forward to those plans being implemented. My final guest is Ms. Gifilo Ndaba, who is the national organizer of the National Informal Trading Association of South Africa.
Alliance
of South Africa. So there are many of you. There you go. Thank you. And I'm going to start with you since you volunteered. the informal economy is so huge. I sat there doing my prep for this, and I was astonished. It's up to a trillion rand per year in this economy. And I keep thinking that is such a huge part of who we are, of our economy. It contributes so many jobs to this economy. It contributes so much money to the GDP of this country. And yet every time I come across you, your colleagues, when I read about them, it's all about how bad things are for the informal trader, how tough the system is. Why is that? Why is it that you're such an important cog of this economy and still the politicians, not particularly these politicians, but our system seems to be constantly kicking down the trader who's doing all these amazing, incredible things in challenging circumstances?
Okay, I'll start with by saying informal traders are the heart of the economy. And the sad thing, the government is taking us for granted. I'll say this because we don't have offices and we're making trillions of money. Because without us buying from the big companies, like the people who are manufacturing, there's no business. So the government first, they must start to take us seriously, respect us, because even if we can do whatever, selling those magwenya, before we are doing magwenya, we are buying flour, we are buying oil, we are buying salt, and we are buying it every day without fail. So the government needs to take us seriously and respect us. That is what I'll just start with. We need to be taken seriously because we are also the drivers of the economy.
On Sunday, I was with a friend of mine and we're driving down. I was in Soshanguve and he stops and says to me, "Hey, I want to get the afskop." Afskop, for those who don't know, is half a sheep's head and it's cooked and for those who like it, it's delicious. It's absolutely fantastic. And so he stops and he says, "That lady sells the best afskop in the world." Okay, and he goes up to her. He pops out his wallet, and basically he knows that she uses a Yoko machine, and he taps and he gets two half sheep's heads, and off we go. And I thought, wow. And I was thinking about this conversation. I thought, wow, this that business recognizes that here's someone who's contributing to the economy. I don't want them to get mugged, and so they can the money can go directly into their account. And I'd like you to contrast for me those two things, that what you've just said about how government and politicians don't take informal trade seriously, and how the big banks and many of the smaller banks and the new banks are really tapping into that. There seems to be more respect from those, from business, from banking, than there is from government.
I think the banks, they're starting to open their eyes now. I'll say that because of now they're starting to give the informal traders the POS machines to say, don't hold cash, rather take it through the machines. So they're starting to open their eyes through those informal traders.
Is it enough?
It's not that enough because of they just give them those machines. They don't teach them because other informal traders, they're not using the smartphones. So they need to teach them to how to use that smart POS, how to use the smartphone for the businesses. I'm saying this because of here in South Africa, we're very much behind compared to Ghana and Kenya. I've done the research for informal traders. Ghana, they are more and more far regarding to the doing business on the digital. So South Africa is like we are on number 0.0. We are very far. We need to tap in, make sure that everything is digitalized handily.
Why isn't that happening faster? Why are we claim to be the world-class African cities, for example, for us in Joburg. Why is it that it's not happening faster? Why are we lagging behind when it's to our advantage for that to happen?
I don't want to answer that because I don't have answer for that.
Lubabalo Magwentu, I'm going to ask you one of the key questions for informal trade in this city is that people get kicked off their spot on the corner of Jan Smuts and some other street. People get kicked off their corner in Marshall Street, wherever. How do you balance the need for a robust informal trade and governance in the city?
Thank you. You know, I think it's important that we get our priorities correct. We've got to be a government that responds to the needs of the people at the time. We can't behave as if we are still in the 80s. Why do I say that? Things change. There's high rate of unemployment. There is poverty that is out there. And if you are really serious about addressing issues of unemployment, inequality, and poverty, you therefore cannot leave behind the informal sector. Because when talking of the informal sector, you are talking about the livelihood of the people. Some people are educated today because their mothers were selling amagwinya in that corner. They were able to take them to school. Because of that, in other families, people, when they go to sleep, they've got something to eat. What we need to do, yes, it's important that there is law and order in the city. But it's important that we try and balance the two. In balancing the two, we should be more biased in terms of supporting the informal traders. The government should be saying, what is it that we can do to support these people? In Johannesburg alone, close to 500,000 people are employed due to informal traders. That's about 23% of the employment of the city of Johannesburg. Now, if that sector alone is able to give you that, it simply says, if you are serious about addressing these issues that I've spoken about, you therefore need to invest in this economy.
So you're the chair of the committee that's responsible for governance in the city. How have you, as the chair of that committee, held the executives responsible that you cannot strangle small business and informal trade in the way that you're doing? Because I would put it to you, over the past 3 weeks, the mayor has been all over Johannesburg saying, not Abahambe, but basically saying, I'm cleaning up.
You see, there are many issues involved here because there's also illegality that is happening. Also, the government needs to ensure that it claims on, you know, illegal foreigners that are in the country that are also participating in the very same economy. Now, for you to be able to then manage it, you need to then invite all those that are legal, which is what has happened, to say all those that are South Africans and those that are legal in the city, they are then invited to say, please come so that you are registered. We make sure that you are all registered so that once we've got that database, we are therefore able to assist you to ensure that there are stalls, you have stalls that are put in place where you can actually trade. Because without that information, then there'll be lawlessness. So it's a tricky one, but it's something that has got to be done.
Mudimwa Mwila, you want to say?
I yes.
Yes, go ahead.
Hello to everybody. You know, we didn't greet back when you introduced and greet us. I must start by saying, this is the first podcast interview, actually, since I was nominated last week, Saturday, to the incoming. And I don't know how did you guys twist my hand to be here. But nonetheless, good people.
Mr. Mwila is the candidate for Action SA to be MMC for Economic Development in the city of Johannesburg. So this will be your baby.
It is already my baby because I've said to the people of Joburg, I'm not going to wait for after the elections to pronounce on how this is done. I've been in the public service as a career diplomat and I've served in 4 countries in 4 continents. I've traveled to Asia. I've seen how the Asian economy, what is called Asian tigers today, if you look at countries like Thailand, China itself, Malaysia, how they were built out of small businesses, out of what we term informal economy. And I don't know why. One of the things that I'm going to demystify the minute I enter the office is to change this terminology of saying a business that is organized like them, it's informal. What makes it informal when the politicians already, like the councillor have said, you address these people as organized groups, you put rules and regulations to them. The minute you regulate people, you cannot continue to call them informal because they are regulated. And there is a policy in this country that has been neglected and ignored by the current government since 1996 of how should the so or the former informal business that was seen by the apartheid government as boom meba magwenya at the taxi rank conducted themselves, because when the new constitution came in, they were protected, those businesses. And they were supposed to have been informed, regulated, and supported from the onset when those regulations were brought into power. So that's one of the first things I'm going to do to make sure that all those who conduct business, they are actually not only being supported by the state, the government, in terms of any other form, like establishing their businesses, like registering their businesses. You ask a very pertinent question. You made an example with banks. To say banks are doing it, why can't the government do it? Banks are doing it for one purpose, for profit. That's all. They are not doing it to aid this.
But this is good profit. I know they make money, but I was amazed by... They've made it easy for me because many, many times I've noticed now that I don't have any cash in my...
Yes.
And for that lady, it was kaboom, that I can actually trade with her.
It has 2 elements. It has an element of trading easy for the buyer. It has also an element of security because we know with the crime in the country, the issue of robberies, people who were selling in the past on their way home, they get robbed. So they've closed that part. They've come to their party. Where government is not doing it right, it's allowing the so-called informal traders to mushroom all over the pavements of the city. they get accustomed and used to trading in that manner for many years. And you want to come because it's an election year under the disguise that you want to manage out illegal foreign nationals who are contesting on the same platform by pushing everybody out who is legal or illegal. That's one element. The second element is people. You know, there's something I'm bringing in as one of my bullet points out of the five core areas of being the incoming MMC of economic development. If we do not protect some sectors of the economy, we are doomed as a nation. Many countries are doing it, and I don't want to go to Asia, Europe, and America. Mozambique next door, Zimbabwe itself, as struggling as it is. Botswana, 3 months ago, they introduced a policy in Botswana and a list of 13 economic sectors that are regarded as protected. And I'm going to be bringing that to the City of Joburg, and Action SA is for that. When we have foreigners, whether legal or illegal, any foreigner who comes and establish a business in the City of Joburg for being a hairdresser, while the immigration policy says only special skills, what's special about being a hairdresser? What's special about making kota in Magwenya? What's special about car wash? Those are not special. South Africans have been doing it for ages, even before the new dawn, and they can do it. And we have to protect those sectors. It is in the law. It was never applied. And it's one of the things that, in order to aid
South Africans... I'm going to stop you there because I'd like to ask your experience of what Mr. Mula is saying. Whether when you say people can be moved, and Councillor Magwenchu also mentioned this, politicians, and I'm some of my best friends are politicians here, but I need to say, when a politician tells me that they're going to determine my footfall, because you might have negative views of traders, but when they sit on the corner down here, it's because there's footfall. There is a calculation about I will set up near a construction site because I will get footfall. The MMC for Economic Development arrives and says, yeah, we are doing this, and builds me a nice shiny stall, but puts it in Sandhurst, where all these people don't want my Magwenya or my any other of my product. And that is where the problem lies, isn't it? That a lot of times it's, I'm the MMC and I'll tell you where to go.
I think...
Let me
just want to come in there. I think we need to understand those dynamics. You know, if you've seen...
Oh, Mr. Magwenchu, you could say it's just excuses.
No, you see, it's important that we have those stalls, but we should not end there. If you've seen informal traders, some of them, you'll find them driving those trolleys from Shoprite, going to where they will be selling. The government should then be in a position to assist them to get proper trolleys that they can drive to go to wherever they want to sell on that particular day. Have a license for that thing. You are driving, your stall is here, you're moving from this stall, but you go to that corner to go and sell, and you'll come back here.
The purpose, in order to add, the purpose of regulating, it is not to choke the small business or the so-called informal. It is to make sure that all other regulations and bylaws of a city are adhered to without choking and taking people out of business. He made an example, or you mentioned the issue of where there is a demand. The demand is at the corner of this street and that street. You don't have to go and operate a gas cylinder at the corner of a street just because there's massive number of people who are requiring your finished product while you are putting the very same people and yourself at risk of operating a business or a gas cylinder in an unauthorized place. And some people, they don't even use gas cylinder. They use paraffin. They use all forms. And the purpose is not to bully them out. The purpose is not to chase them out. It's to create an enabling environment, like the stores where they can cook. And as is correctly saying, a mode of transportation of goods supported. by the Department of Small Business and the city itself, business development function, to say, we know we are incurring an additional cost for not cooking at that corner, but go and cook at a designated safe place who will aid you to transport the finished product to your customers where you want them to be. When I grew up and started working, for an example, there were people who will come to a government, I'm a government civil servant, who will come to our government offices selling fat cakes and sandwiches with a trolley inside the building, because the government at that time had facilitated small business and upcoming business to can make business. So they will push a trolley on the corridors of a government building, but the food is prepared somewhere under correct circumstances. And they were aided financially as well as with tools and infrastructure to conduct business. The trolley is talking about, it is a hazard of, for example, imagine you are a driver, there's this person pulling a trolley with mbaula, making a pony, you know, maize, and pulling it on the street. Now some taxi, it's passing there, leaking fuel or oil next to that mbaula. It's a risk and a hazard. We must manage those things, but how do we do that? We engage with organized groups. We cannot, no politician in this world.
I'm going to stop you there because I don't know if you're contradicting yourself or I'm misunderstanding you. You say when you started off as a civil servant, someone would come and do these things and the system worked beautifully.
Yes.
Cook there, sell here.
Yes.
And there you have it. My question to you is, we seem to have solved the problem. So this is 15 years ago because you look so young.
I'm very old. I turned 54 last week. So we found the system working. The apartheid government had a program to aid. Unfortunately, it was the selected few of those businesses. We found that system there. We found the system working. And we destroyed that whole value chain.
Why did a system that worked get changed? Because what you describe is what should be the standard.
It changed because Botham Mulua had to come and get a tender to supply lunch for people in the office. It died because politicians became greedy, became selfish, they became owners of those businesses. And what did it do? It led people to start informal trading on the pavements of the street. I studied in Joburg. I was at the city library every day. There were people selling fruits, vegetables on the pavement, but there was order and the risks were managed. So what I'm saying is it's doable, but we cannot plan. I'm having my first engagement meeting with the organized groups to say, what do you want? What do you expect from Action SA when we take over office? And we cannot do and implement any policy without the input from the organized traders.
Kifilo Ndaba, you want to respond to that?
Yeah. Informal trading business is not something new. The new thing is the regulations that are hard for people on the ground. They will say they want clean places, what. For example, at other, let me say next to the malls, there's no toilets for those people to go and pee. There's no tap for them to wash hands. But they will put harsh regulations for them. So before government can say wah, 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 make sure that all those things, they are there. There are women who are taking their kids from 4 o'clock a.m., go to buy stock where they are buying vegetables. After that, they'll come back with those kids. They won't go to crutch. So my suggestion, how about to build small ECDs for them and build toilets for them and taps for them and say, please use these ones, use these things, push your business. And after that, they can start to put those harsh, harsh regulations for them because of they've done something. But without that, minus zero.
That's the governance.
You see, some of the challenges that we are faced with as the people are deliberate. Whether it's unemployment and poverty is deliberate. The reason why people are not supporting this sector, it is deliberate, so that people depend on the state. The state wants to create a dependence. Because a person who is independent, who's doing things for themselves, when it's time for voting, they don't vote using their stomachs, but they vote using their heads. But now, when they want to create a situation where Mama sitting here would be saying, you know what, at least I'm getting 350 rands, so let me vote. So that is why you would not then support, have them supported. Because there's simply no reason why they would not be supported. I mean, even in terms of storage, you know, some are staying in the locations. They after work, what do they do with that, with that stuff? They must still incur costs to take them back home. Whereas if there was storage that was here, ensure that there's also sanitation, good sanitation, that we ensure that they are supported, but they are not being supported because someone wants them to be depending on them. So that when the time is right, they can say, hey, this one is doing something for me, let me support it.
This is the Action SA plan when we take over, and we will take over office 4th of November, absolutely, we will. And this is the plan, and the plan, we can go and read, we release our manifestos this past weekend, each one of us. We are 10 incoming MMCs. One of the guys who's going to be responsible for properties in the city. There are so many, over 100 government-owned properties, buildings that have been left to be dilapidated in the city of Joburg. Those kind of buildings, the plan we have is to take them from these stacks who have hijacked them, and those that are habitable, convert them into business stalls, into recreational facilities for the kids of these so-called informal sectors. As Mama Awile, you have a cash-going child, but you have to be at that corner, the designated corner of the street, to be selling whatever you are selling. What do you do with the child at the time? You can't be taking the child back to Soweto or to Alexander or to Deep Slot and then you come back and do business in the city. It is the responsibility, it's a social responsibility of a caring government to make sure that there are ablution facilities, as she said. There are facilities for underage school-going children so that when the mothers and the fathers are doing business in the city, the kids are being safely taken care of, because we live in a very unsafe society. And we have the facilities that were neglected and the kids were used. But another thing that I am taking from her that I like very much is saying, government, before you put these stringent rules and regulations, make provision for assets and facilities. Because you already know where we want to trade. And you are saying, yes, trade there, but under this condition, but make them accessible. Don't say to people, make sure your car is roadworthy and you don't provide the roads. You provide good roads. In the same sector, you know, it applies to them. Government must be in a position, and that's what Action is going to do, to make sure that before you put impunity measures on people, you must have provided quality facilities for them to be able to trade, not just the rules and the laws.
Can I ask you, where's this bureaucracy? Where's the red tape? All these regulations that are so harsh, are they coming from local government, from these two gentlemen, or is it provincial, is it national, or how does it differ? If
they're coming from different metros, because the regulations from CJOJ, they're different from regulation from other metros. Vaal and City of Joburg, the regulations are different. So I don't know. I assume whoever was in the office, when he or she wake up, say, I want this, I don't want this.
Each and every city has got its own bylaws. It is therefore important that before these bylaws are passed into law, there should be proper public participation, wherein these sectors are also involved, so that whatever is passed as law, it is something that they've also contributed on, where they've had an input in terms of what needs to happen. This therefore means even in the actual planning of the entire city, whether it's your budget planning, all the sectors must be involved, including the informal sector. Even when there are new facilities that are being built, in terms of space planning, there has to be a question that is asked, how are we contributing to the informal sector? With what we have this huge building that we're building, how is it going to contribute to the informal sector? How are we going to ensure that our people benefit? What is it that has been done? So I think it's an issue of ensuring that they are invited, participate, because you know sometimes, this is what I normally say, at times people who are experiencing a challenge or a problem do have solutions to the problem. It's just that they do not have the resources or the platform to address those challenges. So it's important that that platform is therefore created for them so that they're able to come up with solutions, and we support them in ensuring that their livelihoods are protected.
Mr. Malala, earlier on you mentioned a situation of where is it the resistance, where the challenge is, if the answers are there, the people know. And I've responded to one by saying it is the tender system. He's responding to the second one to say it is actually before he said that, she said it is people being staffed in regulations, and he responded by saying there should be public consultations. When you look at how the industry is set up, the informal sector, that is pretty long. I've known that for years, which if you look at it, it's actually the annual budget of the government. So it's the actual annual budget of the government, not the total GDP. It can be funded only by the so-called informal sector. The annual budget of the Republic of South Africa. Now, if there is no political will, this will never happen. And I do not think the rules and regulations are there to be red taped. It is the implementation of the rules. Because the rules and regulations were well thought of. There were consultations, and they meant for good. But those in the civil service, those in the office of the chancellor, he's saying it that government is supposed to do A, B, C, D, E. She's saying they're not doing it. And then we should come to a point of, do we have diligent and ethical civil servants or people occupying public service offices to can render that service? Or are they there to serve their stomachs and their political parties? And I think that's where the challenge is. And that's why political parties like Action SA, they've went out now to recruit some of us who are professionals in our field, not politicians, not activists, to come and say, there's a problem in the city of Joburg. There's a problem with informal sector. There's a problem with economic development. There's a problem with mainstream finance. As recent as Tuesday this week, the mayor of the city of Joburg went to borrow, and it was both the DA and the ANC voted for them to borrow almost 3 billion rands from the Germans to come and save the collapsing finances of the city, as reported by the Minister of Finance last week. Who is going to be funded that borrowing? It is the residents as well as the informal sector. Were they consulted with the borrowing? No, they were not. This consultation, they only do it towards elections, and when they want to pass the law, that has already been crafted and drafted.
I would not want to allow this a point. The reason why I'm saying it is because he's talking from an ill-informed position. So there's never a time in council where you would see the DA and the progressive parties voting in support of one thing. It clearly tells you that that thing is important, because everyone who has got the best interest of the people is supporting that. And that is exactly what is happening. So I do not want us to divert, because we'll be talking about issues of infrastructure, of which our discussion today is not about that. We can have a discussion about it offline, but you've been ill-informed.
And let's talk about pragmatism. And by that, I mean the ability for all of us to say, you know what, this is good for the traders that are represented by Ms. Ndaba here. So one of the things that I wonder about, if we're going to ignite this economy, is what's a light touch and what's a heavy hand? Because I'll take an example. When I was at school, I grew up just north of Tshwane in Hammanskraal. At weekends, my friends and I would go to the Pretoria Zoo. We'd set up our little stalls there and we'd sell carvings or all kinds of stuff. And then the cops would come and kick us off. And then we'd get our stuff and go around and come and set up again and so forth. And I've always wondered about this, about at which point do you stop people from using... The tobacco bill is coming through now. And one of the things, this is a long time ago and I was a kid, so I can't be convicted for it now, is that I would sell the cigarettes. And the cigarettes would be there and you know, Mr. Muilua would pass by and say, let me buy a couple of loose drawers. And he'd buy one, and then he'd buy one of my carvings, you know, badly made animals or whatever, but he'd buy one and then he'd go off smoking his cigarette. One of the things that will happen with the tobacco bill is that none of your members should even begin to sell, for example, cigarettes and other things and so forth. And I've thought about this, well, what are we prioritizing here? If Mr. Mwila cannot get himself to not have the cigarette, why are you stopping me from selling cigarettes to those who do want them? And so forth. This question seems to be at the heart of this conversation, that the government wants to always be in charge of everything and do everything. And I, you know, I enjoy Mr. Mwila's answers, but I worry that he will get into office and he will want to know everything. What do you... Am I wrong?
You're not wrong, because the government say they put a bill for the tobacco, saying selling the single cigarette is not good, all those regulations. And then us, as Nitasi, are saying you can't stop people for selling cigarettes because that's how they survive. And they don't have money to buy 20 or I don't know, the 20 carton or whatever. So if you are saying they must stop selling the cigarettes, how are they going to survive? Because they've been selling it those cigarettes for years.
I'm going to go to you.
You see, the problem here is that the government does not understand the mandate that it gets from the people. I come from the ATM. ATM is a values-driven political party, and it's anchored on five values, which is peace, ubuntu, transformation, servant leadership, and accountability. And if you take the first letters of each value, it reads as PUTSA. It says put South Africans first, and that is the mandate that the people give us when they go and vote, is to say, put us first. But now what is happening? The laws that are being put into place are laws that are favoring the rich, are laws that are favoring those that are well-to-do, which is not the majority of the people. That is where the disconnect is. So we therefore need a government that understands that it is there to serve the people. It's not the other way around. You know, that is why in our organization, we call ourselves servants, because we understand that we exist solely to serve the people. That is why we don't call ourselves comrades, because a comrade is someone who's willing to lay his life down in defense of his comrade, regardless of what the comrade has done.
Yes, I
let me one by vote. Let me be practical. Let me be practical. I don't want to get into the bill of cigarettes, and of course I'm not familiar with the deep contents of it. However, I disagree with the councillor. When you start saying, and this is the beauty of coming into government as actioners, we are going to action this. You cannot come and sit on this platform as a lawmaker, as the government. He's the government. And he says the government is supposed to, but it's not. You are the government. You are the chairperson of a committee in government that makes and implement those municipal bylaws. Fortunately, in municipalities, the bylaws are made in the municipalities. They are implemented and made there. A party can come into power, or multi-parties can come into power, change and or amend existing bylaws to suit either their narratives or the situation today in the country. What the Johannesburg of 30 years back, not the Johannesburg of today, it will not be wrong for any political party to come into office and say the rules that were passed in 1996, 1997 cannot be applied uniformly today because circumstances have changed. But if you have a government official who's a lawmaker, and even MPs, I always tell them when they say this law is not fair, this law is not, I look at politicians and I say, but you are lawmakers. The people voted you into that office to go and make laws that can suit and apply them, that can suit the needs of the people. Nobody can be absolutely happy, Mr. Malala. And it can never happen in any business. But politically, let me tell you why they are choked. It is because big business is funding political parties to can choke small business not to go and compete. That's why when they see, if you go to townships these days, the big supermarkets, I don't want to be mentioning their names, have gone into what used to be Shoprite's Bani Bani. And they take over that shop and they brand it into these common big companies and then kill all the small business people. Why? Because they're not protected. And that's why there is no need and interest in political office bearers and the business to see them succeeding. My intention, and it's the mandate I got from the Action SA leadership, to say one of your mandates to go in there is to go and engage these people even before you take office. And when you take office, you know their needs. Don't do it when you are inside and you want to implement the laws. But a caring government consults prior to making regulations. Then your regulations are informed by the needs of the traders.
I think it's important that the leader here, when he comments, well, I understand. He just said he has just been recently elected now. So I understand. So they must still teach him the basics, because he seems not to understand what happens in governance. He seems not to understand the role of government, the lawmaking. So I think maybe we need to have a discussion offline around that.
So that the people here can understand. We should have it here. This is the platform. But
no, I'll give you an example. If you're talking of the committee that I serve in, it does not make laws. The committee that I serve in, it's a second serving committee that holds the government accountable. It holds the executives to account. It does not make the laws. It's council that makes the laws, of which Action SA is part of that. So Action SA is part of the lawmaking in the city.
Is the committee not the committee of government? It's not the committee of the council.
Which one?
The committee you are serving on.
No, the one I'm serving on, it is a committee of council, but it's a council is
government
that is responsible for oversight. It's an oversight committee.
On behalf of
government. Yes. I'm then saying, in terms of lawmaking, the laws that are passed in council, and Action SA is part of that. That is my point I'm saying.
Okay, you are correct, and I agree with you.
Okay.
Let me stop you both there and say thank you, all three. I want you to give 1 minute concluding remarks about this issue. But you know, my co-host on one of our podcasts, This is Politics SA, which is very good, by the way. Mondli Makanya and I were in discussion earlier, and we both extremely worried about the moment we find ourselves in as a country. And that is particularly about the anti-illegal immigrant, some xenophobic, all these issues that face us as a country. And the sentiment that keeps on being expressed that, oh, you know, I have my little spot and my work, and I try to do what you're enforcing in your committee. I try to register. I try to do the right thing. I try to use the toilets that are available. I don't go to the street and so forth and so forth. But others are doing it. And so you have this push and pull about how you run a city. So in your concluding remarks, if you're able to address how we get out of this issue, which many of your members are exercised by, about how do we get past this moment and continue to do business and run beautiful cities and a country?
Gavin must consult with us when they want to do anything regarding the law and the regulations. Because mostly they just say they put the laws without consulting, especially the informal sector. And again, they must make sure that at least they teach informal sector, maybe via the TV, to say...
Podcast,
yes. Say, we need this, but before, here are the trainings. After that, they can say, here are the regulations. That's what I would say. Teach us first and put those laws. Because now they're just putting those laws without anything. If you check now, most of them, they're not well regulated. And again, there was a funding that, I think one or two, they got it from those during the COVID and after those, what. Out of those, one or two, they do have that funding. Maybe went back to Treasury or to their pockets. Where is that money? Where is that whatever billions or trillions or zillions?
Mr. Mwila?
Just direct to your question. I must first say, there's no xenophobia happening in South Africa. I have to be very firm on that. The economy and the South African citizens and residents are constrained by various issues. Unemployment, economic issues, as well as many social ills, which includes access to school, to education, and so forth. That is the nucleus of the problem. Now, if a government has failed to take care of those basics, like water, education, health, and employment that they promised people since 1993, not even 94, 93. What will happen is human beings naturally, they will react towards the government and towards the low-hanging fruits. That's why they see foreign nationals, whether legal or illegal, as people who are taking their businesses. That's what is the frustration of the people. Where the government failed them was to control migration into South Africa. I've made an example on my way here to the driver who brought me here to say, do you know that, for example, in conclusion, South Africa is the only country in this world, in the whole world, that you do not require a health permit to come to South Africa. If you get knocked by a vehicle, we are paying for that, whether you are legal or illegal. Health accident fund covers that. No other country does that. Now, it is not xenophobia. It is not South Africa hating other African people or what. It is South Africans saying to the government, protect our business. You can't give us jobs. We are trying something. Protect this thing that we have created in the corner.
Mr. Magwenchi, you have the last word. So you can say everyone is wrong and you're wrong.
Implementation of immigration laws is important. The ring fencing of the informal sector for South Africans only, it's very important. This is what our leader in Parliament, Vuyo Zungula, has been advocating for. Even from 2019, he's been saying it. And I remember at some point in time, he was called as being xenophobic. When he was saying, no, we are saying put South Africans first. We are saying it should be our people that we put first. It's not about us being xenophobic, but we are saying we must first deal with the issues that we have as South Africans, ensure that there's no unemployment. You cannot have a situation where a South African is unemployed and someone from Nigeria is employed for the same level of job, which does not need a specific skill, a specialized skill. Does not. So What we need is to support the informal sector. We need to have an indaba, an informal sector indaba, where they are called in to come and contribute over and above the fact that they are allowed to participate when there's public participation. Thank you.
Thank you. I'm going to take questions. Please give us your name and ask your question. Try to keep it short so that we have time to get an answer.
Hi, everyone. My name is Angelique Mafadza. Our apparently incoming MMC mentioned the thing of large retailers moving into areas, right? He mentioned how problematic that may be because a store belonging to Ntate Sibanibani now can't function, validly so, because someone producing a loan won't be charging as low as ZZ2 might be in ShopRite. But we also can't ignore the fact that when a ShopRite comes to a rural area, it's creating maybe 80-something jobs, and that's touching more families. And Ntate Sibanibani's shop can only maybe have 5 people max, because that's what the means allow for that shop too. So where do we bridge this gap? Where do we find the balance between these formal corporations coming to society, creating this unemployment? I mean, it's not a CEO job, but it's a job that helps. Versus maintaining small businesses that cannot compare in any way.
You'll respond now.
Yes, you may.
I thought
so. You're the incoming MMC.
I thought you want to allow others. It is very simple, ma'am. The way business operate, I don't know why government is not operating that fashion. When government created agencies after 1996, because most trade agencies like small business, they've got agencies like SEFDA. They were created after. It was that whole intention. If the business sector, you use ShopRite as an example, decides to say we are going to Kwama Tuba Tuba township or village to establish a store, they have done a feasibility study. They have done a research to say there's a demand for the goods that will sell. Why can't the Department of Small Business in government with experts conduct that same feasibility study and go and apply, even if that shop of the X in Kwama Tuba was hiring 10 people, but create 10 more of those shops in order to create employment without squeezing out one shop out. Because Checkers of ShopRite, they did a study to do that. Whether it's Chicken Licken or KFC, they did a study when they opened a store. But there's another alternative, is to say to those big corporates, when you come in here, you will not squash this business out. Then you are protecting it. That's where protection comes in. You will keep and maintain that staff and the profit margin will be shared with the existing store. It is the duty of a government to protect that. So I've given you 2 options. I don't know if it helps.
Thank you. I'm going to take a question here.
2 quick questions. Do we know as a country how many people are employed in the informal sector? And do we include those figures in the horrible unemployment figures that are published regularly?
Informal sector they are self-employed. So there are many. I don't have numbers, but there are many. I'll just mention Baragwanath. According to my research, Baragwanath, where is the taxi rank, is making more money than O.R. Tambo. They're making money. So Baragwanath taxi rank, they're making billions more than O.R. Tambo. So there's other, like, for example, near the malls, train station, bus stop, what. So those people, they are self-employed. They are making their money daily.
Is it safe to say that our unemployment figures are far less onerous than we think they are because of this informal sector? It's not employment, but it is people working.
According to the figures I've seen, 19.5% of our total employment is drawn from the informal economy.
In Johannesburg, according to Stats SA, it's about 457,000 that are coming from the informal sector. And they say it's about 23% of the employment in the entire state.
But is that included in the unemployment figures that are published?
There's a big debate about this. The CEO of Capitec does not believe that we have a horrible unemployment number because he says we're not counting people like the lady who used that card and went into a Capitec account, that she's not being counted as someone who is making a living of some sort from that. So
let me also add to that. Officially, I come also from the transport sector. In 2015, Santaco leadership reported that, for example, the taxi industry as a whole, from a car washer to a queue marshal, they were employing 300,000 people. And if you look at the 300,000, most probably only 50,000 were registered employees. The rest are having an income, but they are regarded as unemployed because they are not, you know, contributing to the fiscal, or they are not registered as employees. So the figures, your question that the figures may be highly incorrect, actually, that are being presented before us, because not all elements are being taken into consideration. But that is my opinion.
I'm going to take a question at the back there.
Thank you very much. My name is Ayanda Gunene, and my question is, there are barriers and like perceptions towards the regulation of the informal sector, right? From the people that are practicing in the informal sector. What are those challenges that are leading people to not wanting to be formally like formalized or regulated? And how do you think you can address those attitudes or barriers towards formalization?
I'll start with you. I think it's a question.
Number one is the SARS. Majority, they're afraid of paying SARS. And again, they are comfortable to be informal. Out of 100%, 20, they don't mind to be formal. But 80, they are very comfortable. And daily, they're making 1,000 to 1.5 daily, more than the person who's working in the office. So we've got billionaires on the ground. It's just that they just need to be trained and how to use their money and to be consultant. But informal sector is the boom.
How do you then formalize yourself if you're getting all this money into your account and the tax man is not meeting you, as it were?
Okay. That's why I'm saying they are comfortable for being informal. So that's why out of them, few they want to be formal because of they want to apply for funding from the government and to get access for other things that they want to access. But they are very comfortable to be in that informal sector.
How do we incentivize them to bridge that gap?
Trainings. You just need to train them and make sure that they are being consultant. And then once they understand the importance of being formal, that's how they will start to be formal.
I politically have agree with them, but a different view from a political perspective. During the liberation struggle, we were trained and taught that the government is the enemy. SARS is the enemy. Paying taxes, exploitation. There was never a debriefing. We were never debriefed. Politicians, leaders, us, we never went back to the people and said, hey, by the way, to pay your taxes and to pay for electricity, it's a good thing. That will also create an opportunity for you to grow. So there was no political debriefing. That's why when you go to township, and I will never talk down to the people in the villages and township, to go and tell them that you have to pay electricity, you have to pay tax, it's a very complicated thing. Do you want me to register my business so that SARS must take my money? No, I'm not going to do that. A debriefing, she calls it education, I call it a political debriefing. It did not happen.
I'm going to take this lady, is the last of the askers of questions.
Evening, everyone. Okay. Oh, okay. Evening, everyone. My name is Linda. But before I ask my question, my contribution to the tax thing is that I would be willing, and I'm a taxpayer, I'd be willing with no doubt to pay my taxes if things were proper. like you're paying tax and there's potholes. You're paying tax, then there's load shedding and. So I think the government needs to really take responsibility and say, we've dropped the ball. How do we make sure that our people trust us with their money? Because it is our money. But thank you. My thing, I was in business and I had the privilege of being helped by the government through CEDA, and we had trading missions that we went to. One of the countries that I went to was Nigeria. And in Nigeria, like, there's a question that was floating around earlier of protecting industries. Nigerian government protects the industries to a point where we had a debriefing with South African businesses that are that side. Pick and Pay had just came in. I don't know if they survived or not, but they told us a story about how ShopRite did not survive in Nigeria because they had to sit down and say, how are you going to partner with existing Nigerian companies, which are supermarkets, and not drown them? You cannot come and take over what is sustaining our people. Why is the South African government not doing that without any shame? Because now we are shamed for protecting our people. We are shamed for wanting to protect certain industries. There's labelings, which I think is from misinformation. We need to protect our economy. We need to protect our government so that when we welcome visitors, we are not hungry kids, but we are well-fed. And when visitors come in, we welcome them with big smiles. So for me, I would like to ask, which industries do you think, besides the ones that were listed, which industries do you think we as South African can really take over and protect?
Thank you, ma'am. Very important aspects. You even went far to Nigeria. Let me tell you, at home here, we have a law in the Republic of South Africa. Part of it is the immigration law that says no, it says no foreign national can come and own, for example, a spaza shop. I don't know why they call it spazas. Spaza shop in the Republic of South Africa. Except, the law will always give exceptions. Where this foreign national comes and puts down a 5 million rent, it's a law in this country. The problem is not the law. The problem is enforcement of the law in South Africa. Now, we look at also social ills. Earlier on, I spoke about social ills. And I'll make a typical example. In Botswana next door, it's part of their 13 sectors, a general dealer, a foreigner, whether you are good or bad, a foreigner cannot own a general dealer in the Republic of Botswana. You can't. We are saying informal sector, we are saying as passer. You go to the townships. I don't even talk about Africans. I want to talk about people from Bangladesh and Pakistan who are sitting in the backyard room or a store that used to be owned by a local.
Is owned by a local who runs it out,
yes,
without being forced to do so,
yes,
to Justice Mohammed.
That's the problem, Justice. The problem is the law says you cannot rent out.
You're blaming the renter, not the...
And I'm not blaming the renter. I'm blaming enforcement. I'm saying we must be enforcing the law to the permit holder. Remember, the spaza shop owner has a permit. And the permit rules and regulations are very clear that you can't hand it over to Mr. Bangladesh or Mr. Bamboo. You can't. So the city of Joburg was supposed to go and enforce that law to say to Mandaba, your permit does not allow you to do that to a foreigner. If you want money, if you can't run business, hand over it or rent it out to a South African.
So I agree with you. We have a problem, and it's an ineffective government and a failed governance structure.
Yes,
certainly. But you have a point.
We should actually be deliberate and unapologetic about assisting people that are in the informal sector in South Africa. You know, the reason why that spaza shop owner would rent it out to a foreign national is because he had challenges. Who was there to assist them?
In those was assisted by CEDA.
You see, that is where the problem is. Yes, she was assisted by, but how many are assisted? Look, if you look at these spaza shops, those that are owned by these Somalis and everything, those people come here and they own these father shops. Surely they are funded somewhere. Surely they have support. It cannot come here without any money and then all of a sudden he owns a spaza shop. It's not possible without being funded. It means their government is deliberate about funding them, assisting them for whatever agenda that they have. So the government should also have an agenda, a deliberate agenda of assisting the people to ensure that it deals with poverty, inequality and unemployment.
Yes. Mr. Councillor Magwenchu, thank you so much for that contribution. I'm going to ask to be part of your meeting between the two of you, because I have lots to say on your contributions, both of you. But thank you. That was a lovely question and lovely questions all around. I can see there is one desperate person at the back. No, there isn't. Oh, no, he didn't raise his hand, and also he's part of the furniture here. So I'd like to say thank you all. I'm taking a question, not a trip this week.
It's not a question. Is my thing on? Okay. No, it's just a very brief, I promise I'll be a minute. One, okay, my name's Monty. Oh, I understand. Oh, okay, cool. All right. But the first comment I didn't want to make, but the second I did mean to make. But I just want to disagree with you there about the political debrief that people need to pay for stuff. I mean, it's a country of laws. In a country of laws, laws are enforced, and if you have to pay tax, you pay tax. If you have to pay for services, you pay for services, electricity, and so on. But the problem there is that you didn't need a debrief. You needed an authority that was going to enforce people basically adhering. And the party that governed this country for the longest time simply did not want to be unpopular. So they kept writing off people's debts. And people basically got used to the fact that they don't need to pay. And the culture of non-payment from the 1980s should have been long gone. But the party that used to run this country on its own just did not have the courage to make that happen. And paying SARS, there are laws that says every person who earns money must pay. And you just need to make sure that everybody pays. Whether people are scared, I don't care about whether people are scared of SARS or not. No, I'm just, it's a very short point. And then, but the point I really, I'm forgetting the point I really wanted to make. No, it was to your question about unemployment and the Capitec guy. The Capitec guy, quite frankly, was talking nonsense. There is a massive, the stats that Stats SA releases every quarter are real. The informal sector is factored into those stats. People who may not be in formal employment are captured there. Yes, it's not, it's statisticians have a science. And therefore they do capture, Maybe not as accurately because people are not as registered, but actually they are as close to the facts, to the truth as possible.
You shattered my hope.
Just 10 seconds. And I'm saying that if one had to anecdotally, anybody who walks around the township streets or drives around the township streets on a daily basis actually can see the levels of unemployment because people are loitering and not necessarily trading.
Thank you very much. I'm going to give Mr. Magwenchu the last word and I'm closing this party down.
No, thank you, Justice. I had wanted to comment on that issue. It's not that I never got a chance, but what is important, it's civic education and also enforcement of the law. Those two are key. It's important that people are educated to understand why they need to be paying taxes, why it's important for them to be paying taxes. You know, tomorrow, the deputy executive mayor in the state of Johannesburg will be delivering the budget speech. Some people, when they leave tomorrow, they go to sleep, they'll be thinking that the city of Johannesburg, if she says the budget is 97 billion, they'll be thinking that that is the money that the city has. Whereas in actual fact, it's not that it's got that money. It's money that it's anticipating that it will have, depending on collection rate, depending on the grants that it will be getting from national and provincial government, and also some shares that they'll be getting. So it's not that it's money that we have. And as a result, people do not then therefore want to go and pay for their rates and taxes. Same as with registering as informal traders. They want to run away from paying taxes at times. But where they need to be educated, and they also need to see money working for them. Because it's of no use you're paying taxes, but what are these taxes doing for you?
Absolutely. Thank you, everyone, for turning up for our podcast party. It's always lovely. I see a few familiar faces. It's always lovely to have you here. Thank you to my panel. You've been fantastic, and I look forward to engaging with you over a glass of wine outside. Thank you. Thank you, everyone. Good night.